But during this period, when we are separated from each other, we are trying to spend a couple weeks talking about how can we stick together even when we're apart. And that's kind of almost like an oxymoron. How can you be together when you're not together? But the focus here is to try to see how can we, while we're separated from each other and while we can't be together because of the government regulations, how can we do what we can to stick together even in these times? So last week we started looking at some lessons from the book of Philippians. The book of Philippians is one of those fun books to study that has so much encouraging information and truth in it for us. And so I want us to continue to go through the book of Philippians and just look at some various themes that we can see from this book that can help us, hopefully as Christians, to be able to remember each other and to stick close to each other even when we can't be together. So here's just sort of a review of where we were last week. And this slide is everything. This slide is last week's lesson kind of combined all into one. But we saw last week that these Christians that Paul was writing to in the church at Philippi, obviously, they were separated from Paul. They were separated from each other. Paul mentions four times in the first chapter that he was in chains. The rest of these Christians he's writing to are not in chains, but four times he says that he was in chains, and obviously at this time he is in a Roman prison, and the book of Acts ends in Acts chapter 28 with Paul imprisoned for 2 years, and it's during that time period that he writes the book of Philippians. And so he talks to them in chapter 1 and verse 27 and in chapter 2 and verse 12 about the fact that he was absent from them. So twice he uses that idea of being absent and not present together. But he wanted them to understand that even though they were separated from each other, there still were some ways that they could stay close to each other. And again, that seems kind of contradictory. If you're not together, how can you be close? But obviously we understand that even though we are not physically together, that there are some things that we can do to hopefully stay close to each other. And so Paul wanted them to know how much he was longing for them. Twice he uses that terminology. In chapter 1 and verse 8, he talks about how he greatly longed for them with the affection of Jesus. In chapter 4 and verse 1, he calls them his longed for brethren. And so even though they were apart from each other, Paul wanted them to know there's nothing as good as just being together. He could write a letter and he could bring them encouragement through a written word, but he wanted them to see that there's just nothing as good as just being together. And so he longed for that opportunity to be back with them. But the main focus last week that we looked at is that if we're going to be able to stick together when we can't be together, we've got to spend time praying for each other. And that's what you see, especially in the early verses of chapter 1, that Paul was praying for them. And you learn later in the chapter that they were praying for Paul. And so those prayers were reciprocal in nature. They were praying for each other. And that's what was helping them to stay close to each other. But not just praying for each other. That's the start of it. Praying for each other helps you to feel close to somebody. I know that some of our members have been going through the directory and praying for each other and, you know, just looking through the directory and seeing the pictures and seeing the names and mentioning their names in prayer. It helps you to feel closer to them, especially when you're talking to God about them and for them. It makes you feel closer to them. But then there's the element that helps draw that even closer is when you let somebody know that you are praying for them. That helps to bridge that gap when you can't be together. So that's kind of a review of what we talked about last week, how these Christian friends really missed each other. But today I want us to talk about the fact that even though they were separated from each other, they were able to enjoy fellowship with each other. And again, that might seem contradictory. If you're not together, how can you still have fellowship with each other? But these Christians were still enjoying fellowship with each other. And so what Paul wanted them to understand is that fellowship is more than just being in the same room together. You think about it. There are some churches that their large meeting room they call a fellowship hall, and that's just the name of that room. It's their fellowship hall. Well, you have to ask yourself the question: perhaps is that the only place that fellowship takes place? Is when you are in the fellowship hall? Well, no. The church can obviously be in fellowship with each other, even though they are not in that room. But, and I'm not knocking calling a place a fellowship hall. I'm just using this as an illustration. If all of the members are together in the fellowship hall, does that mean they are all in fellowship with each other? They're in the same room. Does that mean that they are in fellowship with one another? You go to a doctor's office. And where do you spend most of your time in a doctor's office? You spend most of your time in the waiting room when you go to a doctor's office. And there are other people in that waiting room. Are you in fellowship? Just because you are in the same room, you're in the same proximity with those people, would you say that you are in that you are in fellowship with them? That's not the word that we would think of. So just because people are separated doesn't mean that they can't be in fellowship with each other. And just because people are in the same proximity with each other, even in the same room, that doesn't necessarily mean they're in fellowship with each other. You think about some Bible stories. You think about David and Saul. When David went and played the harp for Saul, were they necessarily in fellowship? Well, when Saul picked up his spear and threw it at David, I don't think they're in the same room. They're not in real close fellowship with each other. And so sometimes being separated can help you to be in fellowship. When Judas was there in that upper room, when Judas was there and it was already in his heart to betray Jesus, was he in close fellowship with everybody in that? They're in the same room. They're around the same table. And so fellowship is more than just being in the same room. And it's possible even to be in the same room and to not be in fellowship with each other. So what do we mean by fellowship? When we talk about these Christians being in true fellowship with each other and still having fellowship with each other, what do we mean by that? Well, the Greek word for fellowship is the Greek word koinonia, which you don't have to know that word. That's not a word that's going to keep you out of heaven if you don't know the Greek word koinonia. But it's an interesting word that has been defined as fellowship. That's the way it's commonly defined in the Bible. But it's not always defined by that word in the Bible. The definition, if you just look it up in a Greek dictionary, the word koinonia is the idea of a partnership. And so sometimes, let me put that on the screen. Sometimes that's how the word was used in the New Testament. They would take a prefix, like the prefix, the Greek prefix sun is soon, which is our word for with. And so they would sometimes put that on the front end of koinonia, so they have fellowship with. And sometimes the soon, koinonia, was a word for partners. And you say, what difference does that make? Well, in Luke chapter 5, you have Peter and Andrew, who the Bible says were in partnership with James and John, who they were all fishermen. And so they had a partnership, which if you take that word and extrapolate the koinonia out of it, they were in fellowship with each other. They were in joint participation with each other because that word, the root, has the idea of just being having something in common. And so the idea of having something in common was what Peter and Andrew and James and John had. They had something in common. What did they have in common with each other? Their business of fishing is what they had in common with each other. And so they were in fellowship, where they were in joint participation with each other in that work of fishing. And so they shared the responsibility. They shared in maybe the proceeds and in the profit that came out of it. So think about the word fellowship. There's a partnership. That's what it means. There is a joint participation. Think about the word joint participation, not just a participation on one side and not the other, but a participation together where there are people who are sharing something together. And the reason is they've got something in common. Think about all of those facets, those pieces of the word. And here, I want to give this into play. I want to look at it as this word is used in the book of Philippians. Look in chapter 1 in verse 5. You have the word fellowship, and I think it's the only time in the English translation you have the word fellowship, but it's in chapter 1 in verse 3. Paul says, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making requests for you all with joy. Verse 5 of chapter 1, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. Now, there's a lot that Paul had in mind when he's talking about the fact that they were in fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. Probably, and this is what we see as we get later in the chapter, probably one of the things that Paul had in mind was their financial assistance that they were providing for him in his preaching of the gospel. When you read the word contribution in other places, and we won't see the English word contribution here in the book of Philippians, but we'll see something similar to it. But when you read in like Romans chapter 15, you find the word contribution over there. It's actually the Greek word koinonia. It's not a different word. It's that word, koinonia, and it's translated often sometimes as contribution. And we think contribution, we think, well, that's financially giving of some financial monetary means, and that's what it is, but that's also fellowship. And so it's interesting. Think about that word contribution. Think about that word fellowship. Think about Acts chapter 2 and verse 42. Acts 2 and verse 42 says that the early church, it's established on the day of Pentecost, and the early church continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and in fellowship, the breaking of bread and prayers. But right there it says they continued in fellowship. And it may be, even in Acts 2 and verse 42, that it's not talking about just a broad sense of fellowship. It could even be talking about what they did on the first day of the week in their contribution. But anyway, back here in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 5, Paul was thankful for the fellowship, the partnership, the joint participation that they shared in the gospel, in the spreading of the gospel, in the working of the gospel from the time that they were converted. That's what he means by the first day until the time that he writes this. Look down in verse 7. Verse 7, he says, just as it is right for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart as much as both in my chains, where he was then, and in the defense and the confirmation of the gospel. Look at the end of verse 7. You all are partakers with me of grace. The word partakers there has the root koinonia. The word partakers there, the root word is fellowship there, with that prefix on the front of it that talks about that they were sharing together, not only just in the gospel, verse 5, they were partakers of the grace of God together in verse 7. So they were enjoying a fellowship in sharing the gospel. They're enjoying a fellowship in the in enjoying the grace of God. Look over in chapter 4 because we have this koinonia idea again in chapter 4 in verse 14 where Paul says, nevertheless, you have done well that you have shared. That's the Greek word koinonia. That you have shared with me in my distress. Well, how did they do that? Well, they had shared with him, verse 15, you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, upon their conversion, when I departed from Macedonia, the region in which Philippi was found, no church shared with me. There's the Greek word again, koinonia. No church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. And so there's the idea where especially koinonia comes into the idea that they were contributing financially to the work of Paul. And so that helped them to be partakers together and to share together. But today I don't want us to focus in on the financial side of all of this, but I want you to see that these Christians enjoyed a close fellowship with each other, and Paul was thankful for the fellowship that they had with each other. Let me give you kind of a three-part emphasis, kind of a three-part definition, as it were, or description of what koinonia fellowship is. Koinonia fellowship, this idea of having fellowship with each other, it starts with hearts that have a common purpose. The word koinonia means common. The very root of the word koinonia means common. I won't get into that. So koinonia means common as its basis. So if people are in fellowship, what do they have? They've got something in common. Their hearts share a common purpose. Think about the Christians in Philippi. Make the application to us today. If we are going to be in fellowship with each other, we've got to have hearts that share a common purpose. That's why when you go to the doctor's office and you sit there in the waiting room and you're not necessarily in fellowship with everybody. You don't even know everybody there. You might have a common purpose in that you all want to get better, but it would help if you knew each other's names to really be in fellowship. But you've got to have hearts that are in tune with each other, and you share a common purpose. Second part of fellowship is not just that you share a purpose. That's part of fellowship. But when you share that purpose, then you do something together. You work together. When Paul talked about the fact that these Christians, that they enjoyed fellowship with each other, Paul wanted them to understand it's not just that we like each other. That's a different word. Fellowship is not just that we like each other, and it's not just that we have a common purpose. That's a part of it, but we also work together in this purpose. We are in, maybe next week, we'll look in chapter 1 and verse 27. One of my favorite expressions in this book, in chapter 1 and verse 27, is where he talks about that they were striving together for the faith of the gospel. What does that indicate? Well, they're in fellowship with each other. And what are they doing in fellowship? They are working together. Now, third part of fellowship. First part is that they've got a common purpose. Second part, not just common purpose. They're working together. But why are they working together? Third facet of fellowship is that they are working together for the good of the individual who is receiving that benefit, and also for the good of the whole. This church had sent a financial contribution by way of Epaphroditus, who had delivered it to Paul in Rome. They had sent a financial contribution, a gift to Paul. Why did they send it? They sent it for his benefit. They were in fellowship with each other. They're working together, and they send this gift for his benefit. But was sending that gift and doing that for Paul, was it also benefiting the whole of the church? Well, it was benefiting the church in Philippi. Back in chapter 4, in verse 16 and 17, Paul says, what I want is not the benefit that comes out of this for me. I want the fruit that comes to your account. And so there was a benefit for them sending that gift. It was good for the individual, but it was also good for the church as a whole in Philippi. But what about the church as a whole universal? Here they were in fellowship with Paul and working together with Paul, and it was benefiting the church all over. And here's Paul writing letters, not just to Philippi at this time, but is writing letters to other individuals, other churches, while he's in prison. And Acts chapter 28 says he's receiving everybody who comes to visit him there and has those opportunities. So I want you to think about, we're gonna make application of this for us today, but I want you to think about, does the church enjoy that kind of fellowship today? Even when we can't be together, is it possible for us to stick together through fellowship even when we can't be in the same room? It requires hearts that have a common purpose. These Christians in Philippi were separated by hundreds of miles from Paul. Here we are in this county, separated not by hundreds of miles, might feel that way, but we're not separated by hundreds of miles. Our distances, we're a lot closer geographically. Can we still have hearts that have a common purpose? Is there still something we can do to work together and benefit each other that would also benefit the individual to which we extend that and benefit the whole church in the process and benefit both individuals. That's the reciprocal nature of fellowship. So that is kind of an introduction. That's kind of a lead in to what I want us to see in how these Christians were exercising fellowship in the early church. And I don't know if I've got 13 points. I'm not kidding. I just counted them. I've got 13 points under this. I don't know that I can get through all of these today. But I want us to see, what did they do? What did this church do to exercise true fellowship? And in exercising true fellowship, I want us to see that it kept them close, even when they weren't close geographically. It helped them to stick together throughout this separation. So what did they do? Number one, how did they exercise true fellowship? Number one, they were sincerely concerned about each other. Now, these are kind of progressive. These 13 points, they're kind of progressive. So it starts out that they are sincerely concerned about each other. Look in chapter 2. Look at what Paul says in chapter 2 as he talks about sending Timothy to go and to be with these brethren. In chapter 2 and verse 19, he says, "But I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you shortly." First of all, back up and ask yourself the question, why is he going to send Timothy? Timothy is one of Paul's closest friends. He's one of his constant companions. Even while he's in prison, Timothy is with him there. Timothy is taking care of him. Why are you going to give up one of your best friends? Well, we could back up and say the reason Paul is willing to send Timothy to them is because he is sincerely concerned about them. "I trust to send Timothy to you shortly, that I also may be encouraged when I know your state." Paul was concerned about them. He wanted to know how they were doing. And so he could not send them a text message and say, "Hey, how you doing today?" He could not call them up on the phone and say, "Well, I was just thinking about you today. I wanted to see if you were okay." The only way, one of the only ways he could do that was to send a messenger, send a friend to go and check on them, and then for that friend to come back and tell him. We would go crazy today if we had to wait on a message to come back and it took weeks or months for that message. When you text somebody today, you sit there with your phone sometimes and expect them to text back just like that. Because if you didn't want them to text back, you would just send them an email. Because you know if you send an email, well, that's not nearly as important. But if I send a text message, you know, an email can sit there and they might not see it right away. But a text message, we want immediate return on that. Imagine being Paul. He wants to know how they're doing. He can't wait on a text message. He can't wait on an email. He can't wait on the United States Postal Service, as reliable as they could be. He says, "I'm going to send Timothy to you because I want to know how you're doing." Verse 20. For "I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state." Paul says, "I'm concerned about you, and I'm sending Timothy because I know that he will be concerned about you." Verse 21, "Everybody else seeks their own." Everybody else is only concerned about themselves. What does that say about Timothy? Timothy's not going to be concerned about himself. Timothy is going to be concerned about you and is going to want to take care of you. How were they able to stay close when they weren't close? They were concerned about each other, and they expressed that concern to each other. Look down at verse 26. He talks about Timothy in verses 19 through 24. You get down to verse 25, and he talks about Epaphroditus. And he talks about how he's going to send Epaphroditus back to them. Epaphroditus had come to him. He was a member of the church from Philippi and had come and brought a gift from Philippi to Paul. But now he's going to send him back. Why is he sending him back? Verse 26, "Since he was longing for you all and he was distressed." Well, why was Epaphroditus distressed? Think about that word. He's troubled. He's concerned. Epaphroditus is, he's concerned about the church in Philippi. Why? Because the church in Philippi, the end of verse 26, had heard that Epaphroditus was sick. Now, how did Paul know that? When Paul writes this, and how does he know that, how does Epaphroditus, Epaphroditus is distressed because the brethren in Philippi had heard that he was sick. How did they know that? There was some message that had gone from Rome to Philippi after Epaphroditus got there, after Epaphroditus got sick, that went back to Philippi that said, Epaphroditus, a member of your church, is sick. And not just has the sniffles. You look down in verse 30 where Paul says, he came close to death, hazarding not regarding his own life. So it's not just that he's got the sniffles and somebody reported back and said, well, he got there and, you know, he had a little jet lag when he got there. And, you know, just he wasn't feeling himself when he arrived in Rome. And he just kind of got the sniffles. He's near death. So that report gets back to Philippi, however long that would take. And then a report got from Philippi back to Rome that said, okay, we got the message about Epaphroditus, and we are distressed ourselves. We are concerned about Epaphroditus being sick. So here's a member of the church hundreds of miles away from his home congregation, and he's distressed because they're distressed about his condition. They're away from each other, but they're concerned about each other. That's how, and they're expressing that concern for each other and what's going on. The other passage is in chapter 4 in verse 10. Where Paul talks about, and again, this is a financial indication here, but I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished. Well, what had happened? Your care for me has flourished again. Well, what had transpired? He says, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Obviously, he says, that you did not have an opportunity. Maybe that was time, or maybe that was finances, whatever that opportunity was that they lacked. But he says, just because I didn't receive a gift from you before doesn't mean that I know you didn't care about me. These Christians were concerned about each other, and they expressed that concern to each other. And guess what that did? That helped them to stick together and to be closer together even when they were not together. They were enjoying fellowship with each other. Second thing I want us to see, how did they exercise true fellowship? How did they keep together when they weren't together? Number two, they were seeing each other's needs. And I know that ties in with this first point. They were concerned about each other. Well, they were concerned about each other because they were intent on seeing each other's needs. Look in chapter 1. Look in chapter 1 where you know verse 21. Chapter 1 and verse 21, Paul says, "For me to live is Christ, to die is gain." Those were the two options that Paul saw that he had when he's there in Rome. He says in verse 22, "For if I live on in the flesh," that's one option, "this will mean fruit from my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I cannot tell." I don't know what's going to happen to me, Paul says. Verse 23, "For I am hard pressed between the two options." I'm hard pressed. He looks at those two and he says, boy, there are good things about both of those. He says, "For having a desire," he says in verse 23, "to depart and to be with Christ, which is very far better." He says of these two options, there's no question which one is the better option for me. For me, the better option is to depart and to go be with Christ. And Paul says, if I had my heart's desire, that's what I would go and do. What's the first word you've got in verse 24? Chapter 1, verse 24, the first word I have in the New King James is nevertheless. Two options. It'd be a whole lot better for me to go and to be with Christ. But Paul wasn't looking at himself. He wasn't concerned. If Paul was all concerned about himself, imagine what that would have done for fellowship. If Paul was only concerned about what was good for Paul, imagine what that would have done for helping them to stick together. You've been around other people that are only concerned about themselves. You know people that when it comes down to it, when they're faced with two options, they're going to choose the one that works out best for them. How does that work for sticking together? How does that work for fellowship? Paul says, no worries. While this might be better for me, verse 24, nevertheless, to remain in the flesh. Look at it in verse 24. To remain in the flesh is more needful for you. Not for me. Paul says, verse 23, here's what would be better for me. Forget that. What's better for you, for me to remain in the flesh? That's what's better for you. And since that's what's better for you, Paul says, that's what I want. We're going to develop that part more about how do we not just see people's needs, but do something about it. That's involved in this matter of fellowship. But as we think about sticking together today when we can't be together, what do we need to do? We need to be sincerely concerned about each other and express that concern. Check on each other. And then see to other people's needs. What's more important for them rather than for me? And what does that do? We're going to see this next week. We'll finish this list next week. But we'll see this next week. When you get to chapter 1, verse 27, down through chapter 2 and verse 11, you have a context there about unity in the church. And that's a whole other lesson. Unity, I was planning for unity to be the third lesson in this particular series after fellowship. But unity can only come about from fellowship. Unity can only come about through humility. And that's what chapter 1, verse 27 through chapter 2 and verse 11, that a summary of chapter 1 through 27 through 2:11 is unity in the church can only come about through humility. What is humility? Seeing other people's needs and saying, okay, that's what they need, not what I need, and that's what can help us to have true fellowship with each other. It's being bound together even when we can't be together. May I encourage all of us as we close this out, may I encourage all of us while we're separated from each other, be checking on each other. Think about what are other people's needs right now. What can I do to meet those needs? You know, as discouraging as these times have been, I have seen some of the most encouraging posts on Facebook during this time. When somebody posts and says, "Well, I'm at the store. I'm at Costco. Is there anybody at PBL that needs anything?" That are checking to see. Not just meeting my needs, what can I do to help meet other people's needs? Making sure that we're being taken care of. You know, there's some older members of this church that are getting out and shopping for some folks who are younger than they are in the church. That seems a little bit backwards to me. Maybe those who are younger should be going out and doing the shopping for those who are older. Seeing the needs of others, and as we'll see next week, not just seeing them, but stepping out and doing something about it, helps to keep us in fellowship together. Thank you all for being a part of this study. We're going to take about a 10-minute break and begin our worship together at 10 o'clock.